Hello everyone and welcome to this webinar. This is one of the webinars that we do quite regularly. And in this webinar, we're going to look at education and climate change. And we're going to look at whether the curriculum in our education system is really fit for purpose for tackling what young people want to know about their future, what they want to know about climate change. Now, I'm not going to take any part in this. And Katie English, who you will see in a minute, is going to come on and interview Helen Kamalakis, who is a teacher and has been involved in this area and has been concerned in this area for a long time. So I'm going to introduce Katie now. I'm going to disappear and I'll come back on the end. So Katie, thank you for doing this. Helen, thank you for doing it as well.
And thanks for asking me, Francis.
Katie,
thank you for asking.
Okay, and Katie, I'm going to hand over to you, okay?
Okay. Fantastic. Well, hello, everyone. Thank you for coming. Me and Helen are very excited to discuss this topic with you all. So I'd like to start off with Helen. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
Yeah, my name is Helen. I've lived in Edmonton all my life. In fact, the same street. I live opposite my mum. I was educated locally. I went to Oakthorpe School, where I'm a governor, and I went to Winchmore School, where I also ended up working, and I sent my children there. So I've got big, strong associations locally. I've been a teacher since 1985, 6 years. And I've worked in Barnet. I've worked at Winchmore, obviously. I've worked in higher education and I'm currently working in a girls' school in Tower Hamlets called Mulberry School for Girls, where I'm now teaching health and social care. But I was previously a science teacher and my degree is in biology.
Thank you for introducing yourself. And I was really curious to know why you are passionate about environmentalism.
Well, it started probably when I was in year 12. So I was about 16, 17. And I was studying A-level biology, chemistry and geology. And we went on lots of field trips. And I love the field trips because it meant I got away from home, get away from my parents. I also learned an awful lot about the natural world. And one trip we went to Wales and we visited a place called Centre for Alternative Technology in Machynlleth. And it just blew me away because I've never seen anything like it. It was a basically a museum about alternative technology, about alternative energy, about renewable energy. This was in 1979, okay, yeah. Before it was trendy. these ideas weren't fashionable then. The ideas about global warming. They talked a bit about carbon dioxide. The big thing then was acid rain. That was something that we talked about a lot. Mm-hmm. But just going to this place and seeing what they were doing and the message they were getting across, it kind of switched on a light bulb in my head. And then studying biology and the beauty of the natural world and the beauty and the intricacies of living organisms, and seeing what we're doing to this beautiful environment that's brought all this about, and how quickly we can destroy it after millions of years of its formation is pretty horrifying.
Absolutely.
And so I've had this sort of seed in my head since I was 17. And then, of course, real life takes over, you know, qualifications, working, family and all that. And now it's all come to the fore very, very locally, as you know, on our doorstep with what's happening with the incinerator. So I guess that's my background, really. That's my background. That's where it started.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us. And I was wondering to just talk a little bit more about that, about what's on our doorstep at the moment, what your experience with climate change is at present.
Well, I've been aware of the incinerator and I've read about the various protests against it. I remember Greenpeace getting involved a few years back. And I've visited the place, as you know, back when I was working in a school called East Barnet. I took a group of year 10s who were 14, 15 year olds. Mm. We took them to it was quite an interesting trip, actually. We did a morning at the waste incineration plant and an afternoon at sewage works. Just across the way. It was really, it was smelly. It was the height of summer. It was
pretty
smelly.
I can imagine.
It was pretty smelly, but it was really interesting. And the sewage works was interesting and the waste incineration plant was fascinating and we were treated really well. This is 1989, and we were sat in a classroom, and the children were given something to drink, and they were asking questions. And one of our little kids, well, not that little, they were asking questions about the fumes. What, you know, you're burning all this stuff, and you're making electricity, great, yeah, but what's coming out of that chimney? What's in that chimney? What's coming out of it? Is it safe? And they were asking these really good questions, and these were not bright. They were in a sort of a low ability group. They weren't the brightest, sharpest kids who are really into science. They probably would have dropped science once they'd done their GCSEs. And they were asking these questions, which you know, I just thought, oh, I didn't really think about it, but they were spot on. They were asking the right questions. And this was 1989, like I said. And now we know what's coming out of the chimneys. We know better now. And so I forgot, what was the question again?
Oh, so it's just about your experience with climate change. Yes.
So I've been to the incinerator. Scroll forward a few years, 2020, about February 2020, just before lockdown, and my friend Stella came around with a petition about this incinerator. To oppose the redevelopment of the incinerator, to call for a pause and review. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of, when did this happen? You know, I live, you know, a mile and a half tops, not even that, from the incinerator. From my bedroom window, I can see the chimneys, chimney. And I didn't know anything about this. Apparently there was a public consultation in 2015. And I'm an active Edmonton person. I read the papers, I'm involved. I'm active in my local political party. I'm a school governor. I know lots of people in Enfield. And I didn't know about this thing happening, this redevelopment. I didn't know about public consultation. I was pretty horrified. And so I got involved with this group of people, Stop the Edmonton Incinerator. A few months later, we proposed a motion at the Edmonton Labour Party for a pause and review, which passed, which I'm really, really proud about. And we've been holding protests and demonstrations. We've also linked up with Black Lives Matter in Enfield, because this is a race issue as well, because the area most polluted is often the area of most deprivation. And we find that around the country, that where they build these things is where the poorest people live. And a lot of the people there have a high level of ethnicity. Lots of different ethnicities live there, so it's not just air quality. It's economics. It's politics. It's all sorts of issues that come together, and that's where we stand now. So we just I attended the annual general meeting of the North London Waste Authority as a deputation. I gave a deputation. I read out my proposal, my motion that passed, and there were lots and lots of excellent deputations. There were 13 of us, I think. We had 5 minutes each, and the speeches were amazing. Some amazing speeches from all sorts of people, not just Edmonton, from beyond. No questioning, no elaboration, no replies, nothing. It was just shut down. There was no discussion. It was just shut down, and move on, next item. That's what happened. So it's like they weren't willing to answer us. He read out the same statement after every deputation. It's the same statement we've heard again and again and again. There was no new. There was nothing new to come back from NLWA. They weren't responding. There was one councillor who asked for elaboration. He said, "Well, can I hear a bit more? I'm quite concerned with what I've heard today." He was a new member of the board, and he was effectively shut down as well. So we hear the same arguments. Nobody's really listening. The local community are against this. We've been leafleting in Edmonton and beyond. We've been getting lots and lots of signatures on our petition. There's a head of steam building up. So Kate Osamore is also with us, and Ian Duncan Smith is also opposed to this. Ian Duncan Smith, the most left wing, the most right wing of the Tories. Kate Osamore, the most left wing of the Labour Party. They're coming together on this issue because it crosses party boundaries. It doesn't matter what you vote. When the wind blows your way, you're going to get a dose of this nasty stuff.
Okay.
So, it's, yeah.
No, that's a really, honestly, a very interesting experience that you have had with climate change. And I think it's great that people, locals, are actively getting involved in this. And what I'm really curious to know about actually is, so with regards to things like this, what is your experience with climate change being taught in the national curriculum? So during your experience over 36 years of teaching, which is absolutely incredible, what kind of things have you experienced and how they do teach such a pressing issue to young minds?
Well, I teach health and social care now, but I taught the science before that. There was very little on the environment in the science curriculum. And I looked up the national curriculum yesterday. Yeah. There's a mention in year four about the change the environment that humans cause, good and bad. And there's a bit of a mention in key stage four. And I spoke to some of my colleagues at Mulberry School, and they said, well, it gets a mention at the end of year 11. It's okay. Kind of slipped in as a little bit of an extra. It's certainly not central to science teaching. I believe it's taught quite a bit in geography. There's quite a bit of it in geography, but certainly not much in science, not as central as you would expect, actually.
That's very interesting.
A lot more on other sorts of topics, but yeah, not great, actually. But you know, when it comes to education and the climate, I think young people get it. I think Greta Thunberg's had a massive effect. When you see the protests, it's your generation, Katie, who definitely get it. The students I teach, they understand. It's my generation and above who think it's all going to go away and it doesn't matter. So I have a lot of faith in the young because they are listening and they're communicating in ways we've never even thought of. So there's the TikTok and there's Instagram and Snapchat and all this thing, and these messages spread like wildfire. And sometimes that's bad, but in the case of like the Thunbergs and the climate action groups and things, that's a good thing. And young people do get it. They understand the message. They really do.
Okay. That's interesting. And I was also wondering as well, when you're saying, you know, they understand the message and how they are perpetuating this message, are there any specific experiences you've had over your years of teaching that come to mind when discussing that? So in the sense of, have you seen anyone discuss it in one of your classes, or maybe perhaps a poster made by a student in the school, anything of that nature at all?
No, nothing. I can't, off the top of my head, I can't really think of it much, really, because we're so crowded with so much content.
Yes.
And there's so much pressure on teachers to deliver the curriculum, get those kids through the exams, get the best possible grades, get those high levels in the league tables. There's no time to explore these really important topics. There's no time for that. You're whizzing through a curriculum at breakneck speed. Same for A-level as well, as well as GCSE and Key Stage 3 and Key Stage 2. Teachers are rushing to get through, got to get it done in time. And there's no time to explore really these really important issues. They're so important, you can't just rush it through as part of the curriculum. I don't know, it needs something else something else. Greta Thunberg's got a lot to answer for. She's done amazing work and she's not even on the national curriculum. Maybe she should be.
So in terms of that then, what do you think needs to change about climate change being taught in the national curriculum? Do you feel like more time should be allocated within the subjects that we've discussed, like science and geography? Or do you think a new approach should be taken?
I think it needs to be raised every single year, again and again and again. I think it needs to be cross-curricular. I think it needs to be, it's just too important. This is an existential crisis we're facing.
Yeah.
Governments don't seem interested in doing this. In fact, I believe Michael Gove tried to damp down the education of climate change when he was education minister. So it's not a popular topic to bring up. Mm-hmm. It's not convenient to bring it up, but it's got to be. You can't just say, "Oh, we're doing it in geography. That's it." It's got to go across everywhere because it's affecting communities everywhere. Science, have it in science, have it in geography, have it in history, have it in languages, you know, incorporate it across the curriculum in some way or another, you know, incorporate it in, trying to think of technology. Technology would lend itself really well to studying about climate change.
Absolutely, exploring renewable energy. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. It's I don't have all the answers, Katie, but I know at the moment,
your perspective.
It's not really being addressed adequately as part of the statutory curriculum.
Okay.
And that needs to be looked at.
Do you think then, especially since we were talking about Michael Gove and somewhat, do you think it's more of a top-down approach that needs to be taken, or do you think it should be from the bottom up? Do you think top-down in the sense that the actual curriculum needs to change on a national level, or do you think that schools individually should be making these efforts to integrate it
schools, further? I mean, ideally they would, but I know how schools operate. They're busy, busy places, and we've had the last year and a half of disruption. Unless it comes from the top, these things are going to get squeezed out. It has to come from the top. There are loads of teachers who would love to do it, but it's like I said, there's so much to get through in the school day. On top of, we're not just teachers, we're kind of counsellors, and we're looking at safeguarding, and we're looking at children's mental health. We're doing all these other things, which are also really important, but these really important topics are not getting the attention they deserve, and I think it has to come from the top. And if they bring it from the top, teachers will embrace it, absolutely embrace it, you know. Yeah,
that's a really in-depth, beautiful answer. Thank you, Helen.
Thank you.
I've also seen a question pop up from a Duncan Struthers that says, where do you see subjects such as RE in dealing with the climate emergency?
I'm not an RE expert, but I think a lot of religions will talk about caring for the environment as well as caring for each other, and that the environment is created by God or whatever they believe in, and that it would be sacrilegious to damage the environment, you know, to cause damage. I believe that could, that I'm not an expert. I know that's a possibility. How do different religions look at it? Talk to local faith leaders, see what they think. That's an interesting question. I never really thought about RE.
That's a very interesting.
Thank you for that question. It's really interesting. I'm sure there are the different religions all have something to say about caring for our environment, and you know that it was created for us, and keeping it perfect and looking after it as we look after each other. I guess. Stop me. I mean, tell me I'm wrong if I'm wrong. I don't know.
There was also another one actually that's just popped up as well, as we've been discussing in response to Duncan Streeter's question. There's one from a Cedric K, and I'll just quote it. It says, I expect it to be in geography. Is there anything in PSHE or citizenship about long-term purpose of government or economy? Which I suppose is an interesting question. I think maybe that's in relation to, as well as teaching more young people about what's happening, what skills and knowledge should we teach so society becomes better able to tackle climate change and other existential risks? Really good questions, guys. Thank you for asking.
Fantastic questions. I'm feeling put on the spot here.
That's fantastic.
So to look at the question about PHSC.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we don't deliver anything like this in PHSC at my place. We do the usual. We do about drugs. We do about sex and relationships. I don't remember anything on climate change. I think in citizenship, I'm not sure. I don't think they do. Teaching young people about happening skills and knowledge. So the skills and knowledge would be basically being able to find information that's reliable and scientifically based, and not to just pick up any old bit of knowledge, just to be very selective in where you find your information. I think that's something we should be teaching our young people, because some of the rubbish they come up with, you know, I mean, just look at the anti-vaxxers and the sort of stuff they're picking up online. So I'd say teach children to be selective and to be very careful about where they get their information. I think that's something we could be teaching them, definitely. I'm not education.
It can be things as simple as watching documentaries on Netflix that are based off of really solid scientific information. There's several that have come out this year that are incredibly interesting, that really just help to educate outside and inside of the curriculum if teachers wish to show those. There's also tons of books that are available that are easily accessible by online, by Kindle, and that you can even pick up a hard copy now that we're allowed out and about. There's so many ways that young people can educate themselves on climate change. But also I find it really interesting when Helen did discuss that young people clearly understand the issue. They clearly know what's going on and they are experiencing it in their everyday lives, and that perhaps it is not only within the curriculum but also outside of it, that people of different generations may need to change the ways that they are receiving information about climate change.
You were mentioning Netflix. We saw Seaspiracy a few months ago. Oh yeah. My God. Even my daughter, who is very, I've gone vegan recently. My daughter was like, oh, I'm never eating fish again, which is something for her. Just think about Blue Planet 2, the effect that had. I mean, it was explosive. That's that episode about plastic pollution. It was everywhere. It went viral. Somebody like Attenborough can take this on board. And that has an effect. It's really, really powerful effect. But it's still not getting through, is it? Still not getting through. We've got COP26 coming up in September. I'm not hopeful. I'm really not hopeful, Katie. It's quite depressing when you think about it, because it's not great for business, is it? You know, well, it could be great for business, because if we invested like into green energy and alternatives, it could be great for business. It could be great for jobs. It just means people have got to rethink the way they look at the world. I mean, it's one of the things I said at the NLWA AGM is like, you know, we burn things. Since the start of the dawn of time, we've got to rethink how we get our energy. We've got to rethink how we get rid of our waste. We've got to rethink actually whether we generate waste at all.
Well, I think that's something that could definitely be taught in history, looking at the transition from non-renewables to renewable energy and the importance of it for the future generations, the economy, for everything. I think that's
the revolution. The reason it was called the Black Country, because it was so dirty, the smoke was just made everything look black. It's called the Black Country in the West Midlands. I don't know much about history, but I do know about the Black Country Museum. That was very interesting. So there are all sorts of cross curricular ways we could get this message across. And children would be receptive to it. Young people are receptive to these messages, definitely, because it's their future. It is their future we're talking about. You know, in 30, 40 years time, I'm not going to be around. But you are, you know, and my kids are. So it's more for them. That's no reason not to get involved. For me, maybe that's why children are more involved in it. They get it. I've yet to have an argument with a child about whether climate change is real. You know, they just get it. They understand it. I'm very hopeful for kids. Very hopeful for the young people.
That's good.
That's why it's brilliant being a teacher, because it's such an optimistic, hopeful career. And children are amazing. They never cease to amaze me. It's the most brilliant, I think, most brilliant job in the world. I've never regretted it. You know, for 36 years, I've never regretted being a teacher. It's hard, but it's just so rewarding. And kids are young people. They just constantly amaze you and make you laugh. They're just amazing. They're wonderful. They're wonderful. I'm in a really good school. I'm in a great school at the moment. So I'm very lucky, very fortunate.
I'm really pleased. I was really interested actually to explore a little bit more. When we mentioned COP26, do you think the curriculum and such will benefit if we integrated things like this and raising awareness about it in schools a little bit more? You know, perhaps doing like after-school activities around boosting and raising awareness about COP26 and the importance of it.
That'd be fantastic. You could do assemblies on it. There's ways of getting it in there, definitely. We have a Model UN at my school, and these are some issues they could be discussing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the COP26, I mean, it won't mean much to them now, but we could bring this in. We absolutely could bring this in. But it's time, and it's just being able to plan it properly. But you have to. We just have to. There's no alternative. We just have to. It has to be done, in my opinion.
No, definitely. I think it's definitely a need for the top down, so for governments to rework the curriculum and make this something that is universal across the board and is taught in every subject or as many as possible in their own unique and individual way. And that's how we are going to raise more awareness about it. Another interesting question has just popped in from Marion Briggs. I'll quote it to you. If children already understand the problem, do they not need to be supported and guided in ways to alleviate effects, for example, school gardens, renewable energy, and in school, etc.?
Spot on. I mean, I was in my classroom today and there's loads of abandoned plastic bottles in my classroom. And everyone asks me, I keep them when I take them home because there's so much stuff that's chucked. This is something the school could do something about. We should just stop selling plastic bottles. Just have water available. There's nothing wrong with our tap water. There's lots of stuff. We used to do recycling, but schools generate huge amounts of rubbish, loads of paper. I put my paper in the recycler. I don't know if anybody else does, but yeah, there are lots of things schools could be doing day to day just to support this message, this environmental message. Absolutely. School gardens, what a brilliant idea. You know, you just need an enthusiastic teacher to get involved, someone who's got the time and the energy. So that's, yeah, they're lovely ideas. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. So just to summarize everything, one final question. So what do you think moving forward then we can do to help educate people about climate change in general, so not just in the curriculum? What are your three main things you would say?
Katie,
just overall,
three main things. I think we need an overhaul of the national curriculum.
Okay.
I know the council are bringing in these low traffic neighborhoods and they're not popular, but that we need to get that message across that the reason they're doing it is to reduce car use. Like loads and loads of journeys are less than a mile, I believe. You would know this, Katie, is that right?
Yeah.
Loads of car journeys are less than a mile. Well, people need to use their legs. The message is not getting across. They're just seeing it as an inconvenience. And I know there's lots of very angry people in Palmer's Green who really object to what they're doing. And, I nearly went down the wrong way once. But I think the message needs to get across. I haven't got the answers to this, Katie. I'm in education. So I'm going to say definitely a rewriting of the national curriculum to include climate change at every key stage, even at key stage one and two. It's crucially important. As for adults, what can I say? I mean, I don't have the answers. People like me, we're putting leaflets indoors, having those meaningful conversations, but there's not many of us really, considering how many thousands and thousands of people live in Enfield. How do we get that message across? It's a hard one. I don't have the answers, Katie. I'm really sorry.
That's okay. It was just based on your experiences with teaching and just educating in general, what you thought those top three things to say, not specifically three, but would be the best ways to approach it. But I completely agree with you. I think it's a thing of completely remeshing and reworking the national curriculum in terms of integrating it in schools. And I really like the aspect that we talked about in terms of doing things outside of school hours, finding teachers that are really passionate to do things like school gardens and teaching more about renewable energy and raising awareness about events such as COP26. That was a really cool aspect. And I'd really like to see, hopefully in the long term, if we can push it, integrating it into things like PHSE, because it is something that we are experiencing in our daily lives. And it's something that children need to be aware of, well, they are aware of, and know about ways that they can approach it using their individual powers, the powers that they have.
Yeah, I mean, I was listening to a podcast tonight about the immigration bill, which is going through the Commons at the moment. And this lawyer was talking about how there's so many, a lot of refugees are because of climate change, because their countries aren't able to grow enough food. Climate change has caused a destruction to their habitats, and people are, I mean, there's a refugee crisis which has a lot of basis in climate change, which people don't realise. So I just thought of another aspect of climate change, migration, and this country doesn't take, we take like one, so much less, so many fewer refugees than the rest of the European community. In the other countries, we take very few refugees, and it's going to get even less. But a lot of those are generated from climate change because of the not being able to grow enough food and having problems with the climate and the environment. Sorry, I just thought of that.
No, that's okay. That's a really good
Just thought of
outlet.
that. Yeah.
No, but thank you so much for speaking with me today. It's been absolutely fantastic to listen to you and hear you share your experiences about working within education as a teacher and what you believe it needs to change in regards to this. So thank you so much, Helen. I'm really looking forward
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Katie.
with you more. And yeah, to really, get this group off the ground and running full steam ahead. So thank you
Oh,
very much. I really appreciate your time today.
it's lovely to talk to you, Katie. Thank you.
Okay, well, thanks both of you. That was a really great interview. It shows that you're thinking it through, Helen, and I think you did a really, really great interview there,
Thank
Katie.
you. You were fantastic.
And I mean, some of the things you said are really important because very often, students at schools are taught about the small things about recycling, not that that's small, but that they can change the world by picking up litter, and they forget the big things like you mentioned, like COP26, like migration, which is a big issue, like the emissions and how you stop them, like how do you protest, like the school strikes, which should be a part of the curriculum because it's a tradition which goes back to the suffragettes and beyond, that protests are important, and looking at all those things are really important. So, thank you both for doing that. I think it's really interesting skill and a lot of people food for thought. So what we'll do is we'll end this part of the interview now.